Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, Clean Keys Real Talk, episode 209. I started bringing back the numbers again. I wasn't saying the numbers for a little while, but I always knew what the numbers were. I have faith. So this is really in Keys Real Talk 209. There's some relevance to that number. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but somebody somewhere will get to it. Lee might know what it is. So it's a big one. How's it going, bro?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. How you doing, bro?
I'm chilling. I'm just getting ready. I'm about to head out on vacation tomorrow, so I'm excited.
Hey, before we even get started, me and Keys want to send a speedy recovery out to Conor McGregor. You know, heal up, bro. Wish you a speedy recovery, and looking to see you back in the octagon or a boxing ring or whatever it is you do, man. But heal up, bro.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that was that's pretty scary. Hopefully can make a speedy recovery. Yeah, I agree with that. It's definitely scary to see that type of thing, and it's crazy because in the past couple of months I saw a post earlier, and somebody pointed out the fact that in the past three pay-per-view UFC events, there has been a major injury in each one of those events. And if you look back, you had McGregor in this one. The previous event, you had my boy Jamal Hill. And if you look at the previous one before that, I want to say it was Chris Weidman. So you had back-to-back major injuries in the last three pay-per-view events, which is nobody's fault. It's just strange it must be a bad aura or something over the octagon, man.
Well, Jamal Hill, his was based on a referee. When he got his arm broke, the referee should have stopped the fight.
Yeah, because me too. I mean, he was trying to – the thing was with that fight too, and you know, I like Jamal Hill. That's my guy. I picked him to lose that fight because I just felt like – and I want to say I actually predicted Paul Craig to win by second round submission. I think he did it in the first round. But, you know, I predicted him to lose that fight. But I do like Jamal Hill. I'm definitely a fan of his. And that's another guy that I want to see come back with it. You know, and Weidman. You know, all of them. But, he was tapping on the other side. And the ref was super late on that one. That was a bad stoppage. Very, very bad, very late stoppage. How do you feel about UFC 264, though? What did you think about the event overall?
I thought it was good. Definitely some shockers with Giles and Ryan Hall losing. Martino giving Sean O'Malley a good fight. I thought Nico Price, I didn't see round one, so I don't know how the fight went with him, but I thought he looked good in the middle of the second going into the third round. And our girl, Aldana, man, she's not to be trifled with, but she's not on Amanda Nunez level. So outside of that, and I thought Wonderboy, man, I thought he did himself a disservice, bro. I thought he fought a little bit too tentative early in the fight, and he allowed Gilbert to gain confidence. And I think early in the fight is what won Gilbert the fight, although Wonderboy started finding his rhythm late. But overall, man, it was a good card. I mean, it's hard for cards to live up to the billing when we expect. And then the way the card ended was kind of a letdown. But, overall, I thought it was a good card.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't see much of the main card, to be honest. I didn't see much of the main card because, you know, I had company over. I had a little fight party, probably like eight people. And there was stuff going on in the kitchen that I was trying to help out. There was cooking going on in the kitchen. I was trying to help and clean at the same time as trying to watch the fights. So it seemed like as the main card started kicking off, it was like I was like out of the room more and more, and I missed like a lot of those main card fights. I didn't see the Greg Hardy fight at all. I only caught the tail end of that, the replay. I remember seeing Wonderboy and Burns, but I feel like I missed like at least an entire round of the fight. And same thing with Aldana's fight. I didn't see Aldana's fight at all. I want to say I went outside and I might have been on a smoke break during that fight. Not because that she was on, but just because I was just feeling a smoke break and I just had to go out. But it was a good card, and I'm glad that she won. And you know, Greg Hardy got knocked out. I think he, you know, we'll get into a little bit of analysis about that in a little bit. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it was a pretty solid event. You know, one thing that I thought about it was I definitely felt like the main card went by extremely fast. I know I missed I missed parts of it, but at the same time, if you just look at it, there was a lot of finishes in the main card, and I just think that made it go by really quick because it was like first fight of the main card, okay, Sean O'Malley, that was kind of long, and it kind of like set the bar, you know, high with that one because it was kind of like, you know, a fight that had a lot of people talking. And then it was like a time warp from that fight up to the co-main event. You pretty much flew through the next two fights because you had, I want to say, first round stoppages, if not second round stoppages in both of those next two fights. So they went by really quick.
Yeah, you had Adalia won in the first round. Tuivasa won in the first round. And then Gilbert and Wonderboy went the distance. And that was a three-round fight. And then, you know, the main event ended at the end of the first round. So, yeah, it really wasn't a lot of, yeah, it was quick because everything was on finishes. I mean, all right, let me get this off my chest, man. Herb Dean is a great ref. Herb, why you stop the Mortano O'Malley fight, bro? Let Mortano finish the fight. Don't let him have a KO loss on his record. Man, that dude did everything, and he made that a fight. He gained so many fans in that fight with his toughness, and he deserved to at least go to the judges' scorecard, stand in the middle of that ring with his head held high. And for Herb to start the fight, man, I just thought that was – he just did my man a disservice. But I tweeted out at Chris, was like, hey, man, great performance. You know, looking forward to see you in the octagon again. But Chris needs to work on head movement and his defense. He took a whole lot of shots in that fight, but that kid is tough, man. And he gave Sean O'Malley a hell of a fight. But Herb, everybody talking about you, bro. And when they talking about you, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, my thing was, too, is, I mean, I agree with you. It's just that, I mean, obviously, there's not too many guys that come in for their UFC debut and they look great. You know, there's not too many guys like that. I mean, one of the times that I can remember that happening was with Johnny Walker. He debuted 0-0 versus Khalil Roundtree Jr., and I want to say he won by first-round knockout. We got him in a tie clinch, and I want to say he landed like a knee to the – I don't know. There was something in there that he did. But, yeah, that's one of the only times I could think of where a debut came in and just, like, actually looked good. You know, most times a debut comes in and they don't look too good. So, I mean, because they usually put them against, you know, somebody very high level early on. You know, that's where they go wrong with that. And I think that fight, they just were scrambling, and they probably just – that was the only option, and they really wanted O'Malley on the card. So it is what it is. You know, I have my thoughts about that, but it is what it is. I think that was just a thing of wanting to have him on the card, so I won't dig at O'Malley too much, you know. And Mortino, Yeah, he took a lot of shots, and you could see that he was, you know, leagues below, like, the level of O'Malley as far as the striking. But at the same time, you know, if I think if you put him versus a guy that, you know, is unranked, someone that's not, you know, such a prospect like O'Malley is, I think he'll look better. But they kind of just threw him to the wolves with that one. And you got to remember, too, O'Malley was preparing for an even higher level guy. You know, he was preparing himself for, he was going to fight Ricky Simon. I forget who he was going to fight originally, but I know they were going to have him fight Ricky Simon. Yeah, so he was preparing for pretty much a very, you know, a battle-tested guy. You know, Lewis Smoker had been in the UFC for a long time, so he was training for a UFC-level guy, you know, a guy that's had a plethora of fights. And then they were going to have him fight Ricky Simon, who was ranked in the top 15 at one point, and he's a high-level guy, you know. So he was training for, you know, a much higher-level opponent, and then you put him in there against a guy that basically we all knew that he could beat, and you could just see the skill difference. And it is what it is. It's not a knock on, but, you know, he has a lot of heart and a lot of balls to even step up and take a fight like that for his debut. And he took a lot of the shots, which is kind of, I think, kind of like it's kind of embarrassing for O'Malley, honestly, because that guy was standing right in front of him. He was walking him down for the entire 15 minutes. If you look at it, O'Malley was on his back. He had O'Malley on his back foot the entire fight. Obviously, he wasn't winning the striking exchanges, but he wasn't afraid of them either. O'Malley did not look – yeah, O'Malley was dominant in the striking, but he did not look like he was intimidating Martino. Martino was not afraid of his power, and I think that kind of was a bad look on O'Malley. I think that made a lot of people, including myself, question O'Malley's power and his finishing ability, being that that was the case in that fight. I mean, maybe that guy was just that much of a warrior, but I don't know. I mean, I think next you got to let that guy take some time off, come back, give him an opponent that's, you know, a non-ranked opponent that's not, don't put him in there, you know, throw him to the wolves. Give him somebody that's more reasonable. You know what I'm saying? Give him, I don't even know who to give him, to be honest with you, but give him somebody.
Me either, bro.
You know, maybe put him in there with Casey Kenney. You know, I kind of like that fight. Maybe put him in there with Casey Kenney. I feel like that's more reasonable. And then for O'Malley, let's finally have him fight a ranked guy. You know, I think it's kind of sad at this point that we're still watching him fight guys that, you know, we expect him to beat. So, yeah, I think that's the next one for that one.
But you see who his call-offs were? Dominique Cruz and Cody Garbrandt. Those are Sean O'Malley's
call-offs. I thought
O'Malley's
he called out
Ralph. No, he ain't called out Ralph. He called out. No, he called out Dominique Cruz and Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah, that's kind of weak to me. I mean, you got Rob Font right there, who's a killer. But see, you know, the reason why, I mean, it makes sense to me at the same time because he saw how Rob Font just dominated Cody Garbrandt so bad in their fight. And now you want to call him out. We all know Cody Garbrandt hasn't looked good in a couple of years now, similar to McGregor. You know, neither one of those guys has looked good in the past couple of years. They've been losing a lot of fights. So I think that's even worse of a look on O'Malley, and that makes me think even less of him, honestly, because he's not really striving to fight the best guys. You know, Garbrandt hasn't looked good, and Cruz, I would say, has looked good, but we all know that Cruz is, you know, a little bit past his time. You know, he's still, in my opinion, a very high-level striker and arguably one of the best strikers in the division still, in my opinion. But at the same time, Cruz, I don't even know if Cruz is in the top 15. So, I mean, I guess he is a name. It's understandable in that regard. But at the same time, why wouldn't Sean O'Malley try to go for, like, a guy that could beat him? Like, it seems like he's always going for guys that he knows he could beat. Am I wrong in that? Does that sound reasonable?
I'm with you, bro, because it just seemed like, to me, all right, Because what's the bantamweight?
Yeah, it's 135.
All right, let me go to the updated standards. I'm going to the UFC site. So he's still not ranked. Sean O'Malley's still not ranked. So to me, he called out Dominique Cruz, who was number 9. I don't see how Cody Garbrandt is number 5, but he's number 5. If I'm him, I would have called out Marlon Vera again. I would have been like, Vera, let's run it back. I would have called out Vera, you know, being that, you know, that was kind of a suspect, kind of, well, it wasn't a suspect. When Vera won the fight, he was piecing Sean up. Then Sean got an ankle injury. I would probably have called Vera, or maybe even Divasvili, Marab, who's at 10. I probably would have called out either one of those. I wouldn't have called out Dominique Cruz or Cody Garbrandt. I'm just saying, you're not ranked, so you need to get in the top 15. So I would have called out either one of those guys. But, man, you talked about this about 2 weeks ago, and I think now it's becoming evident that the UFC is kind of protecting him, kind of building him up. But you only can protect the guy so long. Because of the division he in, it's too many hitters in that division, bro. So you're going to have to start putting him against quality competition. And we can say that the one time he did fight quality competition, he lost.
That's true. And the thing is this, too, right, is that, first of all, I can completely understand why he wouldn't call out Davishili. And I think we both know why, because he would get absolutely dominated. He would get dominated so bad versus Davishili, it would be so bad for him, he would get mauled. He would get absolutely mauled and embarrassed. That's my opinion. That's 100% my pick. Davishili is so good on the ground. He is the Habib of the 135 division, 100%. 100%. Did you know that I'm like 95% sure Davishili is also a Sambo world champion?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm 95% sure Davishili is also a Sambo world champion. So he does the same thing Habib does, like I told you. He is to me the Habib of the 135 division, and he's a sleeper in that division. He'll beat all those guys. He'll beat all those guys because it's the same thing, is that all he needs to do is be able to strike for a little bit until he can take them down and the fight's over.
Yep.
That's it. It's like unless you can knock him out early.
Or you got some unless you got some hellacious takedown defense.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he takes guys down pretty easily in his fights if you watch him.
But he called Sean O'Malley out on Twitter, though.
He called him out before?
Yeah, he called him out on Twitter right after the fight.
Oh, after Sean O'Malley's fight?
Yep. Our Twitter timeline on our joint account during the fight Saturday, LKE Real Talk, man, it was on fire Saturday, man.
It was?
Yeah, it was some good shit. It was some good shit on Twitter Saturday, dog. And some bad stuff, too, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I don't even think I don't even remember looking at – I don't even know if I looked at the Twitter. So I think Davishili, that's why he wouldn't take that fight, because Davishili would dominate him, and it would be a mauling and embarrassment. It would be a mauling and an embarrassment. You know, he needs to take a ranked guy, point blank. He needs to take a ranked guy. And the thing is, too, is he also could have called out Ricky Simon, who he was supposed to fight, who's actually is a good fighter and is a dangerous fighter. But, you know, he doesn't call out guys that are dangerous. He calls out guys that, you know, that he feels like are beatable. And that are not as much of a challenge. I mean, Cruz, I definitely think Cruz can beat Sean O'Malley, but at the same time,
I do too.
We all know that Cruz is more so, and you know, he's over the hill in his career. Like he's, I'm a fan of Cruz, and I'll root for Cruz every time he fights. But at the same time, we all know that there's a chance that Sean O'Malley could catch Cruz in their fight. We all know that, I think, and I think he knows that. And same thing with Garbrandt. I think Garbrandt hasn't looked that good, and he knows those are both winnable fights for him. Salva Shaley is not a winnable fight for him. You know, Ricky Simon is a dangerous guy. That's not a super 100% sure win for him. So, you know, you don't see him calling out those guys. So it is what it is. I mean, I'm not trying to disrespect the man, but it's like he goes around the opposition and then tries to say that no one wants to fight him. It's like, bro, you don't even – when it comes time to fight, where were you calling out all these ranked guys? You know, you didn't see him calling out any of these ranked guys when he just needed a fight last week. But when he's not in a fight and he's in the offseason, you see him making videos on YouTube and all this other stuff, tweeting at guys. It's like you should be pushing for those guys when you actually need a fight. And when you have a fight and you're going to the training camp, you should be calling out those guys. So,
but you know what?
Sean O'Malley,
maybe we're looking at it the wrong way. Maybe he ain't trying to be a champion. Because if you're trying to be a champion, maybe he's not trying to be a champion. Because if you're trying to be a champion, you calling out the heavy hitters in your division. You don't. I mean, even when we go back to the early days of Conor, he called out Aldo from the get go. He called out Aldo from the first fight he had up to he got the Aldo fight. He called out Aldo. So. But O'Malley has never even mentioned a top 10 guy name until this weekend when he said Cody Garbrandt. That was the first time he ever said a top 10 guy's name. So maybe
yeah,
he ain't about championships, bro.
Yeah, no, he might not be. I mean, and on top of it, out of anybody that you could call out, you're calling out a guy that, you know, has been losing so bad at bantamweight that he was contemplating moving down to flyweight. I mean, let's be honest. Cody Garbrandt, you know, has been having a rough go at it at bantamweight. So he was, you know, he still, you know, tries to get down to flyweight, you know, because maybe he feels like he'd have more success there. I'm a fan of Garbrandt, but I'm just pointing out. I'm just trying to be honest with y'all. Like, this is really what it is, and I'm a big fan of Garbrandt. You know, he was the enemy in the last fight because he fought a guy, you know, who's from my neck of the woods. He's literally from where I'm at, like my part of my state. You know, Rob Font is literally from my area. So, you know, I can't roll with Garbrandt there, but I'm rooting for him otherwise. But still, I could be honest and just say he's had a rough go at it, you know, in his past probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 fights.
Well, all right, bro. Enough about Sean O'Malley, man. I think we talked enough about his ass. Let's move
on,
bro.
How about this? Next topic, right? So Greg Hardy got knocked out, right?
Sure did.
Greg Hardy got knocked out, man. He got knocked out in the first round by Tuivasa. Now, let's go back in time here. Now, when we were on our show the previous week, I predicted Tuivasa would win by, I think I said KO in the second round. I want to say I had Tuivasa by clean KO, not TKO. Clean KO in the second round. He did it in the first round. Do you remember what your prediction? I think you had Tuivasa as well.
I had Tuivasa winning the decision. I didn't think Greg Hardy would get knocked out.
But guess what?
I thought Greg Hardy would at least, you know, keep the fight at distance and use his kicks and prevent Tuivasa from walking him down, but he totally did everything outside of what I thought he should do.
So basically what you're saying is he took exactly your advice and didn't listen to any of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So he pretty much said, okay, Lee, I'm going to do exactly nothing of what you said. that's pretty good. So I think there's a conclusion that we're coming to here. I think we're coming to a conclusion on our show here. Now, first of all, when Greg Hardy was in his first three or four couple of fights in the UFC, right?
Yep.
You were critical of him because of the opponents that he was getting. You remember this?
Yep.
I remember we were critical of him because of the opponents that they were feeding him. It seems like they were giving him guys that just to pad his record and kind of, you know, move his name up and just so the fans could see him winning. But someone posted on Twitter earlier today, I saw this and I was like, wow, like that's a really interesting statistic. You know what they said?
What?
They said every one of Greg Hardy's current UFC wins, not one of those wins currently on the UFC roster. What does that tell you?
That they were fluffing his stats. They were fluffing his stats. Those guys probably had one fight deals just to fight Greg Hardy. And it goes back to what me and you also said was Greg Hardy is a guy, he has a name for being a football player. We understand that. We got it. Why was he in a main event? Why was he in a co-main event? Why is he even on the main card? You needed to slow roll him, put him on the prelims, put him on a fight night, do this, do that. But the UFC shot him up, had him on the main card. Every time he done fought, he's been on the main card, if I'm not mistaken. He's been a main card guy since he's been in the UFC, which to me is a disservice to him. You make him earn his spot. And now what we see, when he done fought the top guys, he look like he should even be in the UFC right now.
He's losing every time. Ever since he fought guys that, you know, they were so eager to push him to the top of the heavyweight division, and they got what they were looking for. They got exactly what they were looking for because they wanted to push him up there so bad, you know, just to have his name be up with the ranked guys, that now, you know, we saw him fight Alexander Volkov, and he got dominated, right?
Yep.
And then after that, now we just saw him fight Tai Tuivasa, who both
No, Marcin Tybura. Marcin Tybura
about that one.
Yep.
I didn't see that fight. What happened with him? Did he win that fight?
No, he got dominated in that fight.
Oh, man. So he's on a three-fight losing streak of all dominations?
Yep.
I don't know, man. They usually, if I'm not mistaken, they usually cut guys.
Remember,
for losing streaks like that.
Okay, Keys, remember what I said last week? I said if Greg Hardy lose, he put in the UFC in a tough spot because what do they do? Do they keep him? Do they push him down to the prelims? Because you can't push him as a top heavyweight. You can't push him as a up-and-coming prospect no more, say, on a three-fight losing streak.
Yeah, he's on the chopping block. I completely forgot about the Tybura fight. I thought it was the Volkov fight and then this fight. I completely forgot about the Tybura fight. Wow. So, yeah, he's on a three-fight losing streak. I thought he was on a two-fight get-dominated streak, but he's on a three-fight get-dominated streak. That's wow. Yeah, that's
okay,
that's really.
Okay, Keys, I'm going to put you on the spot. You, the matchmaker in the UFC. What do you do with Greg Hardy? Do you give him another fight? Or do you go to him and say, Greg, hey, man, we're going to give you some time off. Need you to work on your game. You may want to, like, you know, travel around and work with different people, work on different things. I mean, what do you do? Or do you just cut him?
Yeah.
They invested a lot in him.
I mean, my instinct is to cut him, but at the same time, I'd probably lean towards saying, okay, we're not gonna cut him, but we're not gonna offer him the fight for a while, and you know we gotta see him progress and make some changes, and he has to show some progress, you know what I mean, and then when he comes back, you still don't push him to the top, you know, you give him somebody that you still don't push him to the top when he comes back. You know, have him go to the UFC PI, spend some time in the PI, you know, and let them see some progress, let them see him put some work in, you know, six months plus, because this dude, ever since he's been in here, one thing with him is he's been fighting often. You know, he's been fighting, like, seems like every couple of months he's been fighting. You know, he's been 2-3 times a year since he's been in here. So I think, you know, 6 months plus, you know, easily the rest of the year into 2022, maybe even have him take a year off. I don't know. You know, have him take some time, go to the PI, try to show some progress. Then when he comes back, you still don't give him a top guy. You give him somebody just to kind of gauge where he's at. You know, maybe give him – I kind of like him versus Ben Rothwell. You know, I kind of like him versus Ben Rothwell. I like that fight. And,
oh, man, I don't know. Ben Rothwell got heavy hands, boy.
but to be fair though, don't all the heavyweights got heavy hands?
Yeah, goddamn. I mean, but I see what you're saying though, because heavyweight, you just don't know what can happen in a fight.
I'm just saying Ben Rothwell is, of course, he could put Greg Hardy out, getting KO'd by Tuivasa. You want to give him another guy that can KO him, but like I said, I feel like any of the heavyweights can KO any of the heavyweights, so really, it's tough to really find him a fight that you're sure that it's going to be like a safe fight for him. There's really no fights like that at heavyweight.
Yeah, I would say either Rothwell or Walt Harris. Because Walt is kind of like on a downhill spiral also. So I think, I would probably Greg Hardy and Walt Harris or Rothwell, like you said. Although I think Rothwell was sleeping really bad.
I think Walt Harris is ranked, though. I think Walt Harris is in the top 10.
Man, he number 12, dog, and he's steadily falling.
I just think Walt Harris would probably smash Greg Hardy, too, though. I feel like that's kind of a tough fight for him as well, to try to see where he's at, you know. But I don't know. I mean, hey, fine, give him that one. And then if he loses the fourth one, he's out of there, man. That's what I would do. I would say that you got to take some time off. Excuse me. Take some time off and then come back, see where he's at, give him a fight, you know, with a guy that's, you know, maybe on the cusp of the rankings, you know, and it's not top 15, but he's not, you know, he's not like a low-tier guy. Give him somebody like that. And if he loses that fight, then that's it. They part ways. That's the way I would go with it, cause, you know, that's how they've been doing all their other fighters lately. You've seen guys get cut left and right. We just saw Overeem, you know, we just saw two heavyweights get cut. We saw Overeem get cut after losing one fight. Yeah, and if you look at that, that's kind of ridiculous because Overeem was on, I want to say, a four-fight win streak.
Maybe even a five-fight win streak.
He was on a five-fight win streak. Yeah.
It was four or five, but he was on a win streak.
Yeah, either way, he was looking really good, and then he lost one fight, and they cut him, okay? And that was at heavyweight. And then also at heavyweight, Junior Dos Santos, I want to say he lost, like, two or three fights in a row. So he lost more fights.
He was getting murdered.
Yeah, he was getting KO'd, like, over and over. So
yeah.
The thing was, Dos Santos was a little different, but, you know, I think Hardy's kind of, yeah, you gotta go across the board. You can't be just cutting everybody and then giving certain guys, you know, better treatment. But going on from that point, for me, that was a feature fight. There's really not too much to say about the co-main event. I mean, I didn't really see anything in that fight that would really make me talk. Like, I don't really know what to say about it. I mean, Wonderboy got taken down. Gilbert Burns, you know, definitely mixed in the takedowns, and, you know, he came in with a game plan and he got it done. I mean, I think that was smart. He didn't just try to stand there and strike with Wonderboy the whole time. You know, I think if he would have gone there and not, if he would have gone there with a game plan of we're not going to try to take him down or we're just going to try to, you know, we have power, let's try to outbox him, like, I think he would have lost. But, you know, he did mix in the takedowns, and I think that was a really good game plan, and it worked for him. So that's good for Burns. I mean, I still think he needs another win before we could talk about, you know, him possibly fighting for the belt again. But, yeah, I don't know. There's not much else really to say about that fight. What did you think?
I thought Wonderboy waited too long to get off, dog. I think he's – if we go back to the two times that he fought T-Wood made him lead the dance because everybody knows Wonderboy is a counterpuncher, a counter-striker, and all this good stuff. Gilbert did totally opposite. He went out being aggressive, and Wonderboy still couldn't get off. But Wonderboy, sometimes his style, to me, you have to be the aggressor when you have the boring style. When your style isn't a fan-friendly style, sometimes you got to take the lead and you got to be the one pressing the action. And he never does that, man, and that's a problem to me. I know that there was a question on Twitter this week about who is one of the top fighters that never won a championship. I think pretty soon, man, we might be pulling Wonderboy now because he just doesn't – his style, to me, just isn't going to win a championship until he brings some form of aggression to the octagon. And he just never seems to be the more aggressive fighter in his fights. Gilbert came up, closed the space, took him down, landed some nice combinations. And the one thing I said on our show last week was, Stephen Thompson, you got to keep the fight at distance. You can't let Gilbert close the space. In the first round, Gilbert just walked him down. I was like, wow, what are we doing here? So, good win by Gilbert, keeping him probably in this division. A lot of people saying him versus Masvidal should be next, but I think it's going to be Gilbert versus Edwards probably, especially if they go with Usman versus Kobe. I think you get Gilbert Burns versus Leon Edwards and a title eliminator, but I'd rather see Edwards wait it out and have Gilbert Burns fight Masvidal. And I think in this fight, if Gilbert Burns was to dominate Masvidal, we'll be having another discussion about Masvidal. So, yeah, man, I really felt bad for Stephen Thompson because I wanted him to, you know, get in a title picture and maybe even get a title shot against Usman, but he didn't get it done. So, yeah, man, it is what it is. It's the fight game.
Yep. You know, for me, I do like Burns versus Masvidal. I like that fight, especially being that, you know, I read a report the other day saying that, you know, it is true that they are working on Usman Covington 2. I want to say November. I want to say it was October, November they were working on that. So, yeah, pretty much Masvidal, I know it seemed like he was – angling for one of those fights, whether it was Edwards or Covington. And now Covington's going to fight for the belt. Edwards probably give Masvidal the fight. You know, I think if you're Edwards, you know, you just dominated Nate Diaz, you know, for 25 minutes. I think you just wait it out and wait for the title shot. Unfortunately, that's probably going to be a pretty long wait because those guys aren't going to fight until probably Madison Square Garden in November. And then after that, you know, Usman's been fighting pretty frequent. I mean, that's going to be his third title fight in 2021. So who knows if he's going to continue that pace if he wins the fight, if he'll, you know, take time off or, you know, if he loses and Covington's the champ. And I don't know. And I don't really know how it would play out. That's one of those moments where you got to just cue up Dana White to say his usual saying, we'll just see how it plays out. You know, Dana White always says that at the presser. He says, we'll just see how everything plays out. So that's kind of the answer for Leon Edwards at this point in time. But it might be a pretty decently long wait, unfortunately.
But the thing is, though, Keys, is Masvidal, he won't take the Edwards fight. They have offered him Edwards more than once, and he won't take the Edwards fight. So it's like you can't have Masvidal and Edwards. So I think Edwards would definitely fight Gilbert Burns instead of just sitting there again because, what, he done went almost a year. We just going to say a year without fighting. He had a bullshit fight against Bilal Muhammad. Then he had a nice fight against Nate. He almost got finished by Nate, but he got the dub. So I think he needs to get back in there. Maybe even try to get on the same card as Usman and Covington. Maybe be the co-main event with Burns. That's the fight I will angle for if I'm Edwards, because Masvidal, I don't know what he's doing or what game he's playing with the UFC, but it seems that he tried to fight who he wants to fight, and that ain't what the UFC all about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Burns and Edwards fight as well. You know, hopefully that one can happen and Masvidal can, you know, go take some time off or something like that. I mean, he's pretty much looked really bad in his two fights with Usman. So I think, you know, I don't think he really has any business getting into like a fight with either of those guys, because that makes it seem like, you know, because that makes it seem like it's a title eliminator fight. And we all know Masvidal needs, like, you know, in my book, he needs two, if not three, really good wins to, like, be talked about for the title. You know, he already fought twice and lost. So I think, you know, we got to pump the brakes on that. I think we do Burns and Edwards. If Edwards wants to fight, I say give him Burns. And then, you know, the winner of that, we could start talking, you know, what plays out with that. But and also, I just want to say, too, that if you go back to around April, May, I had said that it would play out that way, and I think you agreed with me, but yeah, I had said that it would play out that way. You know, I said either way the UFC goes with that matchmaking, you know, the fact that they booked Usman Masvidal 2 and they booked, you know, Edwards and Diaz. I remember saying on our show, I said, I think this is good matchmaking. You know, a lot of people didn't like that they were giving Masvidal another shot, you know, without having, you know, without him going out and getting a win. And then coming back, you know, they said, oh, why is he getting a shot? And then, oh, why, you know, Edwards and Diaz, you know, that's a stupid fight. Diaz, you know, coming off a loss. But what I was saying was that I think it's smart on the UFC, because either which way it went, it made sense. So if it were to go the way that everybody, you know, who really watched his fights would have expected it to go, which was Edwards beats Diaz pretty dominantly and Usman beats Masvidal pretty dominantly, okay, then that sets up a possible Usman-Edwards title fight. And then it also sets up, even though both of your two cash cows both lost, that sets up their rematch. So you can now, that gives justification for their rematch. So you could have the Masvidal and Diaz 2 fight, which they were already talking about. But it makes even more sense now because, in my opinion, Diaz and Masvidal are in a very similar place right now. You know, they've both been looking real bad in their past couple of fights, and I think it's probably a good time for them to run it back. I mean, there's really not many other names for them to fight. So I think things played out more or less the way, you know, the way that was good for business, and now the UFC can, you know, go through with a couple of different good scenarios, even for the losers. So you have that, and, you know, I think that might actually end up being the fight that happens, because I don't really know who else you can even have Nate Diaz fight at this point, because he just, you know, him and Conor are kind of just, like, drifting into this, like, irrelevancy where it's, like, they're both drifting into this irrelevancy where it's, like, who do we really care to see them fight? You know what I mean?
Each other.
Like, with the way they've been getting beat up, like, him, Masvidal, and Conor is, like, okay, these are some of the biggest draws, but who are we really interested in seeing them fight at this point? Like, do we really feel like they can compete? You know, I think it's questionable whether Masvidal can compete with the top five at welterweight. I think that's debatable. You know, I think he loses to Edwards. I think he more than likely loses to Burns. He loses to Usman again. I don't know who else is in the top five. Maybe Wonderboy. I think he loses to Wonderboy again. So, you know, and I think that's the same case for Diaz. I think Diaz loses to everyone in that list. The only guy I could see Diaz possibly beating is Burns, but I'm not even sure he beats. That one's debatable. And then, yeah, so none of those guys, you know, I don't even know who would really even want to see them fight. You know, they're all kind of drifting into this, like, state of, like, nothingness. And, you know, that kind of leads us into the main event segment. What happened?
Actually, Keys, I think what we got to look at, instead of looking at it that way, which one of those guys can beat Usman? It's like, which one of them do we really, really think could beat Kamaru? Because he done beat Covington. He done beat Burns. He done beat Masvidal. He beat Woodley. Woodley beat Wonderboy twice. I mean, when we looking at it, it's like we're looking at who could possibly beat the champ. And I don't see none of them guys beating the Usman, bro.
Yeah, I don't think any of those guys can beat him. You know, and it's kind of like at this point, like, I don't really know. You know, and it kind of goes, you know, like I said, we can kind of drift into the main event here. You know, as far as McGregor, this is something that I wanted to get to. You know, for people that follow us on Twitter, you know, I was tweeting at you, getting ready to talk about this, you know, during the week, you know, because I had just been thinking about it. And then over the weekend, you know, on Sunday and Monday, you know, it was kind of in my mind a little bit. And I was like, wow, like, you know, I was definitely getting ready to defend McGregor, and I will to an extent, but I won't to the extent that you probably expect, because I was actually watching BT Sport with Michael Bisping this morning, and Michael Bisping really, you know, changed my mind about a lot of things. You know, what he was saying, what Michael Bisping was saying on that BT Sport show, I forget what the name of it is, but he was on it. I don't know if that's his show or what, but, you know, he was on it. And, you know, his perspective on McGregor and where he's at in the fight and, you know, what took place after and all that, like, really opened my eyes, you know, to a different perspective on it. And, you know, what I realize now is that, you know, it's kind of embarrassing, you know, to be honest. It's kind of the way McGregor is kind of chasing these, like, feuds and, like, you know, after every fight, like, he's now saying, like, it's never over. Like, it's kind of embarrassing. Like, I don't really know, like, that. I'm not really down with that as a fan. Like, I don't really like that, because it's like, it's almost like he's chasing the rivalry, but he's not chasing MMA. Like, he's not actually chasing progression. Like, he's chasing rivalries. And it's like, what's the point of doing that? Like, we all want to see you win. You know what I'm saying? And if you're not going to come in and win, then I don't want to see you keep on calling out these guys that I know you can't beat. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, especially Poirier, like, you know, he's sitting there saying, like, you know, they're going to fight again, and then Poirier is saying they're going to fight again. It's like, man, do we have to see that fight again? Like, honestly, do we really have to see another fight? Like, Poirier clearly is the better fighter at this stage of the game. You know, he's the better fighter, and, you know, he's the more complete fighter. You know, while I feel like McGregor was winning the second fight, you know, Dustin kind of switched up and started throwing the leg kicks more, and the leg kicks started to really take effect to McGregor. I think, you know, Dustin still got the better of him in the fight regardless. And then, you know, it was really discouraging because McGregor didn't look the same as he did in the rematch in the third fight. It almost looked like Poirier had him figured out even more. And then if you look at the at the stats, Poirier was actually outstriking him pretty bad. Like, it was, he was getting outboxed, and it was just like, that's discouraging to me. And you know, it comes to a point where you have to stop being in la-la land and stop being in denial as a fan and just admit that he's losing a lot. He's losing all the time. Like, if you really go to it, since he won the lightweight title, you know, I always said the worst thing he ever did in his entire career was fight Floyd Mayweather. That was the worst thing he ever did. Because if you look at it, since that point, you know, he's lost 4 out of his last 5 fights. You know, the only fight that he's won was versus Cowboy. And, you know, we all understand that was a fight that it was like, okay, Cowboy, like, you're going to beat that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't really a fight that we felt was a dangerous fight for McGregor. You know, Cowboy wasn't even a top guy. You know, he fought somebody that wasn't, you know, on his level. So he looked good versus him. But, you know, you put him up, you know, he lost the Mayweather fight. He lost to Khabib. Now he lost to Poirier twice. And he's embarrassing himself, you know, at the press conference. He's over here saying things at the press conference before the fight that I was, like, cringing at. I was like, dog, what are you saying, man? Like, what is this trash talk? Like, it was the most strange stuff that he was saying. Like, I just didn't understand what was going on. Like, I was sitting there, and, like, it was, like, really turning me off to the press conference. Like, I was very turned off, like, when he really would have his, like, moments of trash talking. Like, it was almost nice when he stopped speaking because I was like, thank God. Like, I don't have to listen to him saying this embarrassing shit that he's saying. Like, you know, he started a chant at one point with the crowd, and it was, like, the most goofiest, like, trash talk that he had the crowd chanting with him. And I'm like, do these fans realize what they're saying? Like, does anybody have any dignity? Like, I'm starting to think that, you know, a lot of these hardcore McGregor fans have no dignity. Like, you guys are following. This is truly the blind leading the blind. Like, they say the blind, that is precisely what is happening. Because McGregor doesn't even know where he's at, and he's leading a fan base that they think that he knows where he's at, so they're copying his lead, and now they all look like fools too. It's like, you all look foolish. So I don't even understand where we've come to at this point, where the fans at the T-Mobile Arena are doing a chant saying, Jolie's wife. What does that mean? Like, Are y'all serious? Like, that was really a chant? Like, they really went with that? Like, that was ridiculous. You know, when it came down to that, I was like, that was really sad to me. That was really, really sad. And the fact that, you know, we've come to this point, I don't know, man. I'm kind of just done with it. You know, I don't know. I said it in the past couple of years. I'm just done. You know, it became so hard to be a fan of him. And at this point, obviously, I'm still a fan of him, but I just can't get down with bullshit anymore. You know, I can't step up to defend him because, you know, these antics are just inexcusable, and it doesn't even make any sense. Like, he's sitting there, you know, with his leg snapped, you know, talking trash and saying all this stuff, and it's like, yeah, some of the shit, you know, it does make me crack a smile. Some of the shit is funny. But at the same time, it's like, for the most part, like, you know, what is your competitive, like, what are you trying to competitively do? Are you trying to be the best trash talker, or are you trying to be the best fighter? And it's like, it seems like he's just trying to out trash talk guys at this point. Like, he's not really trying to be a better fighter. And it's like, if that's the case, then I'm not down with that. Like, I can't support that, because that's not why I watch this shit, is not to see who's the better trash talker. I'm trying to see guys be the better fighter and actually see the more complete fighter. And, you know, that's what MMA is. You know, that's why I watch the UFC. You know, I'm trying to see competitiveness in the cage. You know, you can get that done in the cage. I understand the certain trash talk at the press conference, you know, but not to the level that he's bringing it to. There's certain trash talk that I'm fine with. You know, when you talk a trash talk that is about the fighter, it's about, you know, exactly, his previous fights. You're talking about what goes on in the cage. You know, when McGregor, you know, says, oh, you shot to the legs, da-da-da, I'm fine with him saying that because, yeah, some people say, oh, well, he just doesn't want to get taken down. Yeah, but guess what? I'd rather that than him talking about this man's wife and talking about, you know, his children and talking about, you know, people's religion and Habib, you know, this and that, and mentioning Habib's father that just passed away. And all this other stuff is, like, so dark to me and just so despicable that I just can't – I can't get down with that, man. I really – at this point, you know, I don't even know – you know, I'm really at the point where I don't even know if I want to see him fight again. Like, I don't really know if I want to see him fight again because I just – I don't want to see the antics. You know, I'm sick and tired of all the hardcore stands that they're all delusional. You know, I had a back and forth today with some kid on Instagram who tried to say that – two losses doesn't mean the end of a career. And I'm like, bro, you sound so delusional. Like, you literally have been saying this for years.
He's lost 4 out of 5, dog.
That's what I'm trying to
say.
He's
lost 4 out of 5. What are you talking about?
That's what I'm trying to say. He goes, two losses doesn't mean the end of a career. And I'm like, man, you sound so delusional saying that. Like, you don't even understand how you sound right now. Like, you guys were saying that. That was what I was saying when he lost to Mayweather and Habib back-to-back. People were saying, oh, he's 0-2 in his last two. What did I say? I said, oh, well, I mean, come on. You guys got to give him a little bit of credit. I mean, he fought the best guy in boxing and then the best guy in MMA back-to-back. That was a different thing. But now, you know, you go in and he lost two more fights after those two fights that he lost. Now he's lost 4 fights. He's only won 1 fight since 2016. And it's like, at what point do you stop the madness and just say, he needs to change something or get out of the game? Like, at what point do you take accountability for a guy that you support so much and just keep it honest with him? How can you sit there and support his coach, John Kavanaugh, sitting there? He didn't see anything in the fight that concerned him. Really?
Well,
there was nothing.
I'm going to jump in.
Man. There was nothing in the fight that concerned him. That is the worst thing that man has ever said. I can't even listen to him talk anymore. I can't listen to John Kavanaugh talk anymore because that is the most delusional thing I've ever heard out of his mouth. If there was nothing in that fight that worried you that McGregor did and you thought everything was fine, he's sitting there saying, oh, if we got to go into the second round, we would have did this.
He should be fine.
You guys all – this
he
is
should
like
be
the,
fine.
This is like the crew of yes men. It really is. This is really like the crew of yes men behind McGregor. That's what it is. All yes men.
Well, I'm going to say it like this. I know we did our predictions on Wednesday, and then I watched Conor's interview with Stephen A. Smith, and he seemed to be super focused. I said Dustin would win by decision. But then after I watched his interview, I was like, damn, all right, he kind of reeled me in. So I text Keys, and I was like, man, I want to change my prediction to Conor 4th-round KO. And Keys asked me, hey, why are you changing? And I'm going to read y'all the text. When Conor said he was looking past Dustin while training for Pacquiao, that took me off guard. So we know there's no boxing, so I think he'll be more focused. But Dustin didn't look phased at the presser. He actually looked calmer than the last fight, which could be scary for Conor, which ended up being more scary for Conor. I think Dustin is just, like you said, Conor fans are Conor fans. Dustin is just a better fighter than him. Dustin has come a long way since he first got knocked out by Conor. And we all know if you go back and watch the footage of the first fight, Dustin was overly emotional. He took everything Conor said to heart, and Conor got in his head. And in this fight, Conor did something in the fight that just reeked of desperate to me. When he went for that guillotine and he really couldn't get it cinched in, you let it go. You know that your game is a striking game. You are not a wrestler. You are not a jiu-jitsu artist. You don't keep squeezing a guillotine that you don't have in. because it's going to take the steam out of your arms. Lo and behold, he let it go. Dustin gets on top, grounds and pounds him, throws some vicious elbows, and Connor did some kind of like, so like I tweeted, it ain't cheating. It ain't cheating if you don't get caught. Dustin was complaining about Connor grabbing his gloves, and even if you look at the steel frame, he was doing it, but hell, the ref didn't see it. The ref didn't say nothing, so fuck it. They ain't really cheating if you don't get caught. So, but, man, Connor is just so good for this sport. But he's better for this sport when he's winning. Man, it was a hard thing to watch when, you know, when he broke his leg or dislocated his ankle or whatever it was, broke his tibia. It was just a hard thing to watch. But Dustin is just better than him. Keys, when he fought Floyd, we questioned whether or not his heart would be into fighting in the UFC again after making so much money. He came back, lost to Khabib. Then they threw him a bone and gave him Donald Cerrone. He beat Donald Cerrone. Then the UFC thought they was throwing him another layup by giving him a rematch with Dustin Poirier, a guy that he had knocked out before. Do I think his career is over? Actually, I'm going to address his fans, and then I get to him. A lot of people like Conor McGregor due to his trash talk. That brought a lot of people's eyes to the UFC. Keys has been definitely one of Conor McGregor's biggest fans. I even call him the president of the Conor McGregor fan club. But as you guys can see, sometimes you'll act where it stand on even your own fans, because there is a limit to what can be construed as trash talk and what is construed as just being disrespectful. Me personally, Keys, I think you said after the fight Saturday that you didn't like what Dustin was doing in the ring. It just seemed like he was being a bad loser. But I think Dustin was just letting it all out, man. After hearing all the shit Connor had said at the press conference, talking about his wife, and I think Dustin just felt like it was time to let off that steam. Now, Joe Rogan went and interviewed Connor with a broken leg. First of all, I don't think they should have did that. But I think Connor insisted on being interviewed. And a guy coming off a loss like that, and based on the injury, and he was basically getting his ass whooped at the time of the fight. You don't know what he's going to say, but you could tell by the way he was acting after the fight that he was fucking angry and perturbed. I want to put a microphone in his face. I probably would have let them roll him to the back and then maybe got an interview after cooler heads had prevailed. But, hey, man, Conor McGregor is a good draw. But my man Keys will tell you, one-trick ponies don't work in today's MMA, bro. You got to be able to do more than one thing to be a successful fighter in today's MMA. And Conor his game hasn't improved. Only thing that has improved with him is his cardio. But other parts of his game haven't improved, while the guys that in his division have improved and become more well-rounded. And I see him coming back. I probably see them trying to hype up Nate, the trilogy fight with Nate. And then probably him weaseling his way into a fourth fight with Dustin, especially if Dustin wins the belt. But the UFC will always bank on guys that can draw numbers for them. Conor made $23 million Saturday. Dustin made $5 million. He made an easy $23 million. I mean, his leg got broke, but it was $23 million. So, I'm not a Conor McGregor fan. Everybody know that. But like I tweeted out last week, I'm not his biggest fan, but Conor is good for the UFC, both in and out the octagon. So we shall see what happens. Like we said earlier, we wish him a speedy recovery. But I think he definitely needs to reevaluate his fights. He needs to reevaluate his coaching. And I think he needs to get away from the outside the octagon trash talk, because it doesn't serve any purpose to the game, and it makes people more become detractors than supporters. Like my man Key said, who's a Conor McGregor fan, he still likes Conor, but he doesn't like the things that comes out of his mouth. So we shall see what happens, man.
Yeah, but it's not even – see, I believe it was his birthday today, so a lot of people are on the social media wishing him his birthday. Okay, cool. But at the same time, people like to just sweep things under the rug and not, like, call shit how it is. And it's like, okay, well, first of all, yeah, it's not just that I don't like what he says. I don't like that he still talks after he gets his ass kicked. That's my other issue as well. And I also have an issue with his work ethic. You know, I'm not a fan of what he says, and I'm not a fan of the way he fights. You know, I'm not work ethic. You know, he puts it out there as if he's working really hard, but clearly he's not. And even if he is working that hard, he's not working hard with the right people. You know, he's not doing it the right way, because if he was, you know, we would see it in the octagon. You know, he would have looked a lot better in that fight. But clearly, you know, he's surrounded by coaches that are telling people to their face that they didn't see anything wrong with the way McGregor fought in that third fight. And they're over here saying if he got into the second round, you know, that would have shown everything. And it's like, what are y'all talking about? Like, this is a guy that, you know, we all said, and I said it from the beginning, that his boxing was much better than Poirier's boxing, and he was getting outboxed by Poirier in the third fight. What are you talking about? Like, this is a guy that I don't think we've ever seen a submission attempt from McGregor in the UFC to this point. I don't think we've ever seen it. And we saw a submission attempt in that fight. What is aspiration? Desperation, okay? First of all, I'll say this. Out of all things that I wanted to say to you on tonight's show, one was this, was that out of one point, Lee, you were wrong about saying on the previous show, you said, when have we ever seen Conor make adjustments in a fight? You saw him make adjustments in that fight, because if you ask me, he was catching on to the fact that he was getting outboxed pretty bad and he had to do something else. So when he was getting taken down, in the midst of while he was getting taken down, he turned it into a submission attempt. And we've never seen him go for a submission, you know, because he never felt like he had to do that. Even times where he was getting taken down, you never saw him go for a submission attempt versus Chad Mendez. He got taken down how many times? Never saw him go for one versus Khabib. He got taken down how many times? But he felt like he had to do it that time. So the only thing that I would say, which was, you know, could have caused debate, which it won't, because I got to finish up laundry to hit Nashville tomorrow, but was that you said he never made adjustments in a fight, and I would say that was an adjustment that he made in that fight, which was probably the one good takeaway from his performance. That's probably the only thing. He also was throwing the spinning kicks. I was hoping to see he threw spinning kicks to the body, and he was throwing leg kicks, which is something that he kind of got away from and he got back to. So I'd say the leg kicks, the spinning body kicks, and the fact that he went for a submission attempt, even though it wasn't the best, you know, I think that it was good that he at least tried it, because realizing that you can't just get by doing one thing, like you said, you need to try to dive into other areas of the game. And that, to me, is those are probably the three good takeaways revolving McGregor's performance in that fight. Other than that, you know, his work ethic, I question it. You know, his trash talk is despicable. His performances in the Octagon, for the most part, have been pretty bad and kind of embarrassing. You know, I definitely think he should tone down the trash talk and, you know, try to start winning fights again before you, you know, try to go into all this and then don't talk about people's family, you know, that stuff as well. And also, you know, I think we may never see it, but I think the only way that he can get back into form, because I don't even think if he fights Nate Diaz next that he can even beat him. I think he loses to Nate. You know, I think Nate will box his head off if he fights him next. I don't think he can even beat him. But, you know, if he needs to change, he needs to go train somewhere else. Like, that's at this point, absolutely has to train somewhere else because his camp is clearly delusional. The yes men, you know, they're saying everything that he does, he's like he's walking on gold, and that's not the case. You need to be honest with the guy. You know, you got his fans on Instagram watching fight clips from 2013 acting like it just happened, not acknowledging the fact that your boy just got knocked out in back-to-back fights, pretty much. He was getting mauled by Poirier on Saturday. Can we please talk about the facts and stop just fantasizing about old times? The past is gone. All that's here is the present, so we have to talk about it. And his fans don't want to face it, and his fight camp don't want to face it. So the only way I see him coming back to some kind of form, not even saying get back to where he was, but get back to being a fighter and being competitive with these guys, is if he can go train at a different camp. If he could go train with some of these other – with his peers instead of talking trash to his peers and thinking that he's above them, maybe go try to train with them. You know, if he were to try to go train with Usman, and, you know, it probably never happened. It probably never happens. But if it doesn't happen, then that's probably it for him, because that's what he needs to do. He needs to respect the guys that got assigned there. Go train over there. You know, imagine he were to go train over there. He'd probably look unbelievable. You know, move into another space. You can't just sit with – there's no top fighters from his gym besides him. There's nobody. So,
nope.
No, I just had to go off on a rant.
Not
about
a one.
Not
a one. I mean, that's a good point because everybody looking at him, but at the same time, it's like he really hasn't been winning. So, what are we doing here? So, but you know, man, it's the fight game, bro. And, you know, I was definitely bummed out when he got injured. The first person I thought about was actually you. I was like, man, I know Keys is like, man, damn, what else could happen? And
yeah, I was disgusted, bro. I really was. But it's just, I was definitely disgusted.
Yeah, because I was like, man, I know Keys is like, shit. So, but man.
Yeah,
don't
get me wrong. I'm not happy to see. You know, I'm not all hate towards the guy, but it's just like I'm frustrated with you know, things he's been doing and the people around him. But at the same time, you know, yeah, it sucks seeing him, you know, snap his leg out. You know, that's why I was mad at the way Poirier acted after the fight, because I felt like he was taunting a guy that literally couldn't stand up, like, and got injured. And what I believe, I don't believe Poirier injured him. I think Conor injured himself throwing those kicks. That's what I think. And there's actually a clip out there. A guy recorded that moment when his leg snapped and then he stepped back on his back foot. Like, the kick he threw right before he stepped on his back foot, you can see where he injured it. Kicking Poirier, but it wasn't Poirier checking it, and it wasn't anything else that Poirier said that is not true. So Conor injured it from kicking Poirier to the body. That's what happened.
Yeah, I think Poirier, I just think that when he did that at the end of the fight, he just had to get it off his chest, man. But at the same time, you do got to show some kind of decorum and professionalism and a little bit of sympathy. But them guys, man, it just goes to show they really don't like each other. And it is what it is. You know, some guys have respect for each other and a lot of you know, but you can just tell them guys just didn't rock like that, man. But I hope Dustin comes back before the end of the year and gets his title shot with Charles Oliveira. I don't think Charles is going to be as an easy win as everybody thinks.
And yeah, I don't know why everybody's saying that.
I don't know either,
even,
bro.
Even Bisping was like, oh, Bisping made it sound like Poirier was just going to walk through Oliveira. I'm like, why is everybody saying that? Oliveira is like a great fighter. I don't know why that narrative is being said. Oliveira could very well dominate Poirier. Like, you got to keep it real here. Oliveira is a very well-rounded guy, very dangerous fighter.
Yeah, man, I think Charles is going to be game. I think he wants people to take him seriously. And Dustin can't use the same game plan that he used against Connor, because you don't want to take Charles Oliveira down because he will submit your ass.
Yeah, he'll take you off the rip.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. But, hey, man, the fight game is crazy. The fight game is really, really crazy. But we shall see what happens, man. But get well soon, Connor. And me and Key's rooting for you to have a successful rehab and get back in there. But hopefully you surround yourself with better camp and you take your training seriously. And be the force you're supposed to be, man, in the sport. That's all we ask for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the next show, we'll have to touch on this for a few minutes at the beginning of the next show, just because this one, I feel like there's more to be said, especially about Corey and Oliveira as well. I think that could be in the next show. I think there's more to be said about that as well. And, I just had to refresh the page right there.
Oh, yeah, a long show. I got to go finish up my laundry. We'll definitely get back to it next week. I'm heading to Nashville tomorrow. But, thank you for everybody for listening. Enjoy the fights that are this weekend. I probably won't see them, but enjoy the fights for me. And, that's all I got. Everybody stay safe. Have a good weekend. Lee, the floor is yours.
Everybody have a good weekend. Be safe. Take care of yourself. Coronavirus is still out there, so don't think that it's over. Even if you've been vaccinated, wear your mask, take care of yourself, still practice social distance. My man Keys, have fun in Nashville. Make sure you get some good barbecue and you try the Nashville hot chicken. So that's two things you got to try. Let me know about it over the weekend. You be safe in Nashville. Have a safe trip. And everybody have a good weekend. As always, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. And we always end our show on a peace.